You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. In recent years, there have been major efforts to destigmatize mental illness and improve access to mental health care. Our next guest played a role in improving mental health in Wisconsin by reporting on flaws in the mental health care system in Milwaukee County and beyond. Now, her new memoir reveals her own family's story, including the loss to suicide of two of her siblings, at a time when mental health issues were hidden and conversations about the topic were few and far between. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have an experience with mental illness in your life, in your own family? Is it something you were able to talk about freely, or was it something recently or in the past that you felt like you couldn't talk about? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Meg Kissinger teaches investigative reporting at Columbia University's Graduate School of Journalism. She spent more than two decades reporting at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She's the author of the new book, While You Were Out, An Intimate Portrait of Mental Illness in an Era of Silence. Meg, welcome back to Central Time.
Rob, thanks for having me. Good to be with you.
I've talked to you in the past about your amazing reporting in Milwaukee County. What led you to tell in detail, I think sometimes what must have been for you painful detail, about your own family's stories with mental health?
Right. Well, having spent so many years, one informed the other, you know, so it's a little bit of a chicken and egg thing. So did my family's experience cause me to be so interested in the mental health system and writing about it as I did for so long, 35 years really, and traveling all over the place. And I learned in those travels, you know, the sorrow and the heartbreak and the just the trouble that families experience when somebody that they love is struggling with mental illness. And it's something that I knew most intimately in my own family. And so I felt like the time was ripe after having had, you know, what I consider to be a fantastic career. I was very lucky to work at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel with very supportive editors. But I felt like my journalism could only take me so far to really help people feel what that's like to live with somebody, to love somebody who suffers from mental illness. I wanted to turn the notebook on myself and tell the story of what we went through in our family growing up in a time where we didn't talk about the elephant in the room, you know, the illness that was killing some of us.
I want to talk about your first encounter with this silence about mental illness. You were, I'm going to say 5 years old, correct me if I'm wrong, and your mom sometimes was not there and nobody told you why or where she was. What was going on and what was that experience like for you as a child?
Yeah. So I'm the fourth of eight kids. That was a big pack of us, you know, which was not terribly uncommon in that post-World War II era. So I was born in 1957. And as I said, the middle of eight kids. And the neighborhood that I grew up in Chicago was just loaded with families of the same kind of deal, you know, families of six, seven, eight or nine kids. And so it was just, you know, we ran amok. It was just, you know, a wild scene. But mothers were just cranking out those babies right and left. And especially when you're, as our family is, Irish Catholic, you know, you were very encouraged to fill up those pews. And so my mother would often go off and have another baby, but sometimes she would be gone and there would be no new baby. She would just be gone. And I mentioned in the book early on about how when I was in first grade and I came downstairs, or just beginning first grade, and I came downstairs for breakfast and my mother was missing and I didn't know where she was. And I would later learn that she was being hospitalized for anxiety and depression. But those were words that I didn't know. Those were words that we didn't utter. She needed to be away. And so that left a big question mark in my brain. Why would she need to go away? And, you know, further still, what did I do to cause that? So there were a lot of unanswered questions, and that really established the tone in our family.
And you and many of your siblings at some point in your teen years especially started to experience anxiety or other mental health concerns. Did you feel like any of you had the tools to talk about that, to tell your parents or talk to each other about it?
Yeah, certainly not, unfortunately. And I want to say that, you know, my mom and dad were wonderful, warm, loving people. You know,
so I liked them reading your book, by the way.
Pardon me?
I liked them reading your book, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
That really shined
through.
They
were delightful, you know, really funny, smart, very caring, just good people. And they very much wanted to have a bunch of kids. I mean, that was not an unintentional decision. You know, we presented them with great challenges. But anyway, I mentioned that all that to say that it wasn't like I was raised by these tyrants and we were on, you know, it didn't feel very sweltering emotionally to us at the time. You know, looking back on my childhood, I consider it to be, have been quite happy. You know, there was lots of love. We were fortunate that my dad had a good job. So we had the privilege of a lot of material possessions. We went on rollicking family ski trips, and there was a lot of affection in our family, but we didn't have the tools to talk about the illnesses that many of us struggled with, namely depression, anxiety, and in the case of a few of my siblings, pretty pronounced and severe mental illness. We just didn't have the words to talk about that. Also, in that era, the schools were not equipped. You know, I went to a Catholic school. There were 50 children in my first grade class. So there were two classes of 50, so 100 kids in first grade, and two really kind of rickety old nuns overseeing us. So we weren't having our emotional needs monitored or tended to. And then at home, you know, there was just a lot of chaos. There was laundry and dishes and food and, you know, lots of things to do. So we weren't taking the time, and we didn't even know how to talk about our feelings and what was happening and our fears, and that, you know, ended up not serving us very well.
Meg Kissinger is with us, longtime reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Her new book is called While You Were Out, An Intimate Family Portrait of Mental Illness in an Era of Silence. You could join in if you have a family experience to share or a question for Meg at 800-642-1234. Meg, your sister Nancy, one of the most painful stories in the book. Can you tell us a little bit about Nancy?
Sure. So Nancy was 4 years older than I, and a beauty. You know, she was very bright, a whiz at the piano. But it was very clear early on that Nancy struggled with her mental health. So that looked like a little kid who got into trouble in school a lot. She had, you know, what the nuns would say, ants in her pants. And then as she got older, you know, those issues became more pronounced. So shoplifting, drinking, ultimately street drugs, very erratic behavior, and just a challenge, you know, a challenge to live with. And my mom and dad really struggled with how to handle her. And they, as I mentioned, they had had the means at one point, you know, to be able to afford pretty good psychiatric care. So she did see a psychiatrist, and then ultimately she was hospitalized. Nancy tried to kill herself many times, and it started out with swallowing aspirin or something like that, sleeping pills, whatever she could kind of get her hands on. And then the older she got, the more serious those suicide attempts became. And by the end of her life, she ended up dying when she was 24. She was really, those last few years of her life were agony for her. And I'm so sad to say it like that. You know, she had so many gifts, and she was, as I said, you know, a funny, just lovely person, but she suffered so much. And so despite our best efforts, you know, despite all the attention and all the best care that my parents could offer her, she ended up taking her own life. She died, as I said, when she was 24. So that was a real, real sorrow for us. But again, in keeping with the culture of silence, we just really didn't process her death. So she died on a Friday night. Her wake was on Sunday. Her funeral was on Monday. And by Tuesday, we were all back doing whatever it was that we were doing in the summer of 1978. So in my case, it was working downtown Chicago before my senior year of college. And we all went into our separate corners and just kind of marched on and never really took the time to sit with one another and to have these deep conversations about what her death meant to us and how that impacted all of us and what worries we have about our own health. So I'm sorry for all those lost opportunities to have those kinds of conversations, because they're very important to have.
We're talking to former Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter Meg Kissinger about her new memoir, While You Were Out, An Intimate Family Portrait of Mental Illness in an Era of Silence. I'll give a different phone number than usual. If you are having thoughts of suicide or concerned about a loved one, the helpline is 988. Again, that Suicide and Crisis Lifeline number, 988. If you have thoughts to share with us on the show, maybe an experience, have you seen a greater willingness to talk about mental illness in the United States? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up next on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Milwaukee Journal Sentinel longtime reporter Meg Kissinger. Her new memoir is called While You Were Out, An Intimate Family Portrait of Mental Illness in an Era of Silence. Meg, we just heard about your loss of your sister, Nancy. Then some years later, another sibling, Danny. Can you share his story and what you and your family went through?
Sure. So Danny was the second youngest in our tribe of eight kids. And he too was quite an engaging character, funny, handsome, a rascal, but good fun. But Danny was greatly impacted, as we all were, by Nancy's death. But I think really, in some ways, maybe more than most of us. He was a kid. He was going to a sophomore year of high school when Nancy died. And I think her our inability to really process her death and speak about it in fuller ways really left a hole in Danny that was really never repaired. So just backing up a tad, The night that Nancy died, my dad gathered us all into the living room and told us, in really no uncertain terms, that if anybody asks, this was an accident. Mm-hmm. And the reason he said that, Rob, was that he was afraid that Nancy wouldn't be able to have we wouldn't be able to have a funeral mass, that she wouldn't be able to have a proper Catholic burial, because in the eyes of the Catholic Church, suicide is a mortal sin. And so you were not to be buried in holy ground. So my dad was really afraid that was going to happen. But the message was transmitted in such a way that it really made us fearful. And I think for all of us, but maybe even Danny especially, just the whole idea that was something to hide became something scary. And so I think when Danny's own feelings of anxiety and depression began to burgeon later in life, he didn't have a good way to learn to cope with that. He ran into some legal trouble. He had caused some legal trouble that he could never really pull himself out of. And so he grew increasingly more depressed and ill and really distanced himself from the family. And even though, again, we tried to swarm him with as much support as we could, Danny ended up also taking his own life. So Danny died in 1997. He was 34 years old. And that just felt like, if Nancy's death was, a wallop, it was multiplied just a hundredfold when Danny died. That felt really scary to us, because to lose two people to suicide in the family just seemed almost impossible. Like, why couldn't we have seen this coming? And what could we have done to make sure that didn't happen again? So these are the kinds of questions that I interrogate myself and our family, And in the book, I go back and look at, go back over those days and retrace those steps, not to wallow in it, mm-hmm. but to take away some lessons that maybe can help other people and see how important it is for us to have these conversations and to really try to understand them more fully so that we can support one another.
Another sibling, and this might point towards some of the lessons. I think this was Jake, your brother, had struggled with serious mental illness, but he seems like he was willing and able to reach out for help, and you and others responded. Can you talk about his story a little bit?
Sure. So Jake is my older brother, and oh man, I wish everybody could meet my brother Jake. He is a hero. So Jake struggles with lifetime, really crushing depression. So what that looks like for him is he has a hard time sometimes even getting his head off the pillow. So he too is very bright. He was an Eagle Scout. He's about as kind as they come. You know, he's willing to help anybody in any way, just very generous. But as his mental illness began to present, also when he was in high school, and when he went off to college, he really struggled and fell into a big black hole and ended up dropping out of college. But Jake, for some reason, has really learned the fine art of asking for help. And I think we put so much emphasis in our society on giving help, which is great. We all need to help one another for sure. But I really think an underdeveloped skill is the ability to ask for help. And that's what Jake really, to me, excels at. He's great at identifying when he's in need of something, some support from us, and he'll reach out, not in a needy or not in a obnoxious way, but just in a, in as I said, kind of in a generous way, just to say, I'm struggling. Can you help me? And then he'll always follow it up by, how are you doing? And what can I do for you? So he models that relationship of give and take. And Jake lives in a group home in Skokie, Illinois, just outside of Chicago. He lives there by choice. He's had the opportunity many times over the years to live on his own. But Jake really likes living in a group setting, having grown up in a big family. That's the world that he knows, and it's one that he enjoys. And so he models for us, as I said, that ability to look out for one another.
Talking to Meg Kissinger about her new book, While You Were Out, An Intimate Family Portrait of Mental Illness in an Era of Silence. Meg, I called your book a memoir earlier, but it's a little different because you're a journalist and you reported out your own family story and interviewed family members. What was that like for you and your family members to dig through this and rebuild this story?
Yeah, that was intense. Well, first of all props to my brothers and sisters. I say the very first sentence of the book, you know, says that if any one of them pulled a stunt like this, you know, I might hire a lawyer and file a restraining order. But I was teasing, but they are just generous beyond description. So, you know, we're now all in our 60s. My older sister's she's 71 now, I guess. So we're getting up there. And we have some wisdom to impart. And I just knew that our family story, you know, could help people. And so I approached each of them and said, what do you think? You know, what do you think if I go back and get these medical records and look at where we failed, where our family fell short in helping one another, where, you know, where other institutions fell short too, you know, the Catholic Church and not ministering to us in the way that we needed, in the schools, you know, in the health system itself, in bleeding my parents dry financially by not providing insurance in the same way that you would somebody with cancer or heart disease. So I wanted to go back as a journalist and really give that full-throated treatment. But in order to do so, I wanted their approval, because I love them very much, and we've already been through a lot of trauma, and I didn't want to just do this as an exercise and, you know, re-traumatizing. It had to mean something. It had to have value for the readers to know this is how it happened for us. It doesn't have to happen like that for you. And these are the lessons that we've learned. And here's how we're helping each other now. You know, we're a hilarious, loving, wonderful family. And that's reflected in how we treat each other now.
And Meg, in our last few moments, if someone's listening saying, this is my family right now, and I don't know what to say or how to talk about it, can you leave them with a bit of advice?
Sure. Find that courage to have those conversations happen. Let somebody who is struggling and is maybe thinking about hurting themselves or taking their own life, don't hurry them through that conversation. Sit with them, not in judgment, but sit with them as somebody who you love and give them that opportunity to speak their piece and to be heard, and offer to go with them to the doctor, to the hospital, to stay with them until they feel like they're safe. You know, let them recognize their humanity. And we all struggle. We all go through difficult times in life, and we all need somebody to be at our side from time to time. And so, you know, find that in those people that you love.
Meg, thanks again for joining us today.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Rob.
That's Meg Kissinger, longtime Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter. Her new book is called While You Were Out, An Intimate Family Portrait of Mental Illness in an Era of Silence. Again, if you or someone you know is struggling or in crisis, there is help available. You can call or text 988. Again, call or text 988 or chat online at 988lifeline.org.